Chapter 8. Into the Long Night. Jamie jerked from his bed and was across the room with his sword in hand, still in his nightshirt, before he was awake. The sound was already over, the clarion ringing sound that had woken him out of sleep. It was only the dying echoes in his mind, the words already gone. And when he went out into the corridor, the guard on his room, who'd been leaning against the wall with his eyes closed, jerked hurriedly straight and pretended to have been awake the whole time. As if he hadn't heard anything at all. Jamie stared at the man, who darted his eyes guiltily sidelong after a moment, and then shot them straight ahead again with a swallow, obviously waiting to be dressed down. Jamie went back into his bedroom. He told himself he'd had a bad dream and tried to make himself put down the sword and go back to bed. It was pitch dark outside, 5 hours before the sun would come up, and the room was unpleasantly cold. But he was getting dressed before he could even start persuading himself, and he went out with his sword on his belt. He knew where he was going, but he didn't want to go. He managed to turn aside and go to Bran Stark's chamber instead. The boy had stopped trying to escape, but they'd put bars in the window anyway, and there were still 2 guards on the door, alert ones. "Any unusual noise?" Jamie said, and the men shook their heads. But when he opened the door and looked in, Bran was sitting up in bed, hugging his knees to his chest. He looked at Jamie, his face floating, pale and accusatory against the dark in the light of the single candle, full of dull hatred. Jamie stared at him, and then shut the door again. He still didn't want to go, but he couldn't help himself. He went down and down into the black cells, the cold dark gone so sharp and biting that his breath was fogging the air before he even went into the corridor. And he kept going until his lantern fell on Eddard Stark, sitting hunched in the back of the room, throwing a hulking shadow against the wall behind him. And he raised eyes that were strangely bright in the dark, blue even in the lamplight. "What's happened?" Jamie said harshly. Stark was staring at him, and then he was rising and coming closer, the shadow moving with him, swallowing up the wavering thin lamplight, and Jamie found himself taking one step back and then another, his heart quickening.
The king in the north has been crowned,
Stark said as he came towards him, colder than the icy air, in a voice that hurt his ears to hear, a scraping against the nerves.
The king in the north whose name is Stark, and I am prisoner here.
His voice rising into a wolf's howl of agony and accusation that wanted to tear him apart, and Jamie was scrambling back in sudden involuntary terror that seized him by the bowels and the base of the skull and dragged him away down the corridor as if it had been a living thing pulling him to safety.
"It should have been me and not my son!"
Stark was shrieking after him. Not a wolf, but a blizzard, a killing storm that wanted to obliterate.
"Coward and oathbreaker, you should have let me go!"
Jamie fled blindly, lost the lantern somewhere down in the dark, and went blundering through the passages for an endless circling time before he finally stumbled out among the dragon skulls in their dusty cellar, grinning at him in toothy mockery. And he managed to stop there, panting for breath, his stomach and chest clenched up. There were tears standing in his eyes, and finally he sat down, with his back to the wall, beside the skull of Balerion, shut his eyes and rested his forehead against his arms, propped on bent knees, and just stayed there in the dark until he could breathe smoothly again. The sun had come up by the time he made it back upstairs, although it was a thin, watery sort of light. Pale yellow puddles coming in through the windows onto the floor. He didn't go back to his room. He went to Cersei's instead. He was still clenched inwardly, cold to the bones, and he desperately wanted Warmth, heat, lust, a kiss from her lips, her body against his, anything, anything at all. Anything from a world of light and life, a world he wanted to be let back into. But when he turned into the corridor, there were three Kingsguards standing watch on the door, not just one. He made himself nod to the men and kept walking past. When he did reach his room again, he was shivering as if he was fevered. He threw his sword belt aside and put all the logs in his wood bin on the fire and crawled back under the covers. And it was an effort not to weep. He had mastered himself by the time of the small council meeting, a few hours later, though he still felt cold and dull. But there wasn't much to discuss. Everything was already ready for the march on the north. The Lannister and Baratheon armies were on the King's Road. The Tyrell grain wagons were rolling steadily northwards to supply them. Uncle Kevin had River Run securely surrounded. Walder Frey had opened his lands, and Lord Bolton held Winterfell. "It's time I headed to the front," Jaime said, and Cersei didn't argue, although she'd spent 3 days persuading Robert that he couldn't go himself.
"And don't you dare cut that whelp's head off if you get your hands on him," Robert growled savagely. "You'll bring him back here for it. I'll have him and Eddard look me in the face before I do it with my own hands."
"As your grace commands," Jaime said, inclining his head. He left the council chamber and sent his squires to go and pack for him, and then he went to the royal wing to see the children. Joffrey was at lessons with Pycelle, both of them enjoying it equally. "How long will it take?" was all he demanded, when Jaime told him he was going. "I want to see those traitors' heads on spikes outside our gates."
"The north is large, your highness," Pycelle put in, pedantic. "The Stark boy may well find some bolt hole to hide in."
"We can't let that happen," Joffrey snapped. "We'll find him," Jaime said. "Once we've destroyed his army, his lords won't hide him anymore." He said it by rote, because it was the right thing to say. The words that came without having to think of them. But Tommen and Myrcella both hugged him, and Myrcella said,
"Please stay safe, Uncle Jaime."
And Tommen asked anxiously,
"Will you bring Uncle Tyrion home?"
"I'll do my best," Jaime said, trying not to hold on to them too tight or too long. It was the first thing that had helped a little. He had to do this for them. He had to stop Robb Stark, who was going to invade the South and try to take the Iron Throne and kill them all. Everything else was just fanciful lies, pure nonsense. He knew it. And he just let himself fall into the trap of the story. It felt good to be on his horse, riding northward with a troop of Lannister soldiers. They carried a blaze of lanterns and changed horses 3 times a day, riding into the dark against it. The daylight grew thinner, quick, as they went. By the time they reached the inn at the crossroads, the sun was staying up for barely 3 hours.
"A bad winter, my lord," the innkeeper said ponderously, coming around the table and pouring hot wine for him and his officers. "Travelers from the north say the sun's almost gone up there. Less than an hour of sun left near Carhold."
"Are you getting many travelers from there?" Jaime said. The innkeeper nodded.
"They say every hale man in all the north has been taken up to the wall. If he stayed, any who didn't want to go, they've come south."
It took another week to reach the Twins. 30,000 Lannister troops were camped outside, unenthusiastic about the weather, which, to be fair, didn't offer anything to be enthusiastic about. Gray and dull, the ground hard as rock, the blasts of chill air sweeping through the camp at regular intervals. Jaime had to be grateful to be welcomed inside the cramped and dingy keep, where old Walder, at least, kept the great hall at a tolerable level of warmth for his own sake, even though he was stingy with the firewood everywhere else.
"You've taken your time about getting here," Walder said at the table, sourly, while a thin soup was served out. "Half a million wildlings could have come down here from the north and gone back up again. Which reminds me," he
he added. A message came for you, passed along from the Red Keep. I thought it might be urgent, so I had the maester open it. Jamie glared at him. Like hell's he done it for any other reason than wanting to snoop. But we couldn't make any sense of it. He beckoned to one of his cowed pages, muttering at the boy, and he got a small raven message and handed it to Jamie. Jamie was expecting something from Cersei, or perhaps the small council. He automatically took it and put his thumbs in the curled ends and spread it out. Easy enough, because it was barely as wide across as his hand, and the whole message contained only a single word in Tyrion's hand. Shit! Jamie stared down at it for one utterly blank, clenched up moment, his whole body going taut. Then he was going. He was on his feet, seizing his sword from the side of the chair, ignoring Walder's querulous calling after him, even the bewildered questions of his men, and making a dash out of the hall through the corridors, shouting, "My horse! Someone get my—" as he burst into the courtyard, and then he stopped, looking up. "What the hells?" one of the Freys muttered. It wasn't snow falling. The flakes drifted more gently, more strangely, darting in swirls with every eddy and taking a long time to settle. Jamie looked at his sleeve and touched a few of them that had fallen there. They didn't melt, only smeared away into nothingness. It was ash. A cold wind was blowing from the north, carrying it over the walls of the keep. The ash kept gently drifting down, dusting a bone-white grayish layer over the dark stones. Jamie stood a little longer, ash clinging to his armor and his skin and hair, and then he turned slowly and went back inside to warm himself by the fire and drink a cup of wine. There wasn't any reason not to. It was too late. The call had ended. He hadn't gone. He rode out with his men for the north the next morning, of course. He was here to lead an army against Robb Stark's army of wildlings and traitors and secure the realm. That was his duty. His only duty. Anything else belonged to the realm of fairy stories and not the real world. The door to that realm was gone and had never existed in the first place. It had only been his imagination. It seemed further away and more absurd with every passing minute. He only wished he'd been riding in the other direction. It would have been easier to let the foolish memory go. The memory of those last moments flying through the castle corridors, like an arrow snapped from a bow, finally loosed, only to be knocked down out of the air just short of the target. Riding into the north made it harder. The wind was so bitter, and there had been snow in the neck. The countryside was blanketed white, the trees rising black against the pale gray sky. It looked unreal itself, and Moat Cailin even more so, looming like a monolith over the road. He knew it was empty and undefended. He even sent a few scouts ahead to make sure. But knowing didn't make the sensation go away. Riding beneath it, that the fortress was watching them go by. The feeling was so strong that he wondered for a moment if he was going mad. That would have explained things better than anything else. If he'd had a low fever of madness running in his brain all this time, maybe it would finally go as soon as he'd gone home. But he had to go north to prove it to himself before he could go back. They marched another 2 weeks through snow and ice before Winterfell came into view on the horizon. A darker shadow against a dim, false dawn. The day before, only a slice of the sun had come up and sunk back down again almost at once. Today, it wasn't even going to make it over the edge of the world. Jamie tried to be glad to see the keep. All his men were. But there was only a strange, cold sense of dread building in him. And it rose as they rode through the utterly deserted winter town outside. Houses with doors and windows hanging open like the vacancies of a skull.
and up to gates, still shut tight at the end of the road. Jamie saw his scouts ride up towards the gates with their lanterns, and then the lanterns were blooming up on the walls as well. But the gates stayed closed even as they rode up to them. "What's going on?" Jamie demanded, riding to the front, and then he stared up at the man looking down from the top of the wall at them. "Baelish?" he said incredulously. He'd vanished after sending them word about the Tyrell bargain. Jamie had thought, when it had occurred to him at some point to wonder, that Stark had probably killed him. "What are you doing here? Were you with Bolton? Wait, never mind. I'm not craning my neck out here. Get the gates open."
"I'm afraid I can't do that, Sir Jamie," Baelish said, looking to one side and giving way as a cloaked figure came into the lantern light beside him. A woman, tall and slender, and she reached up and pulled back the hood from her red hair, glowing vivid in the torchlight.
"I'm Sansa Stark, Lady of Winterfell," she said, her voice cold and carrying. "You're trespassing on our lands."
"How the hell did you get here?" Jamie broke in, staring up at her. It was her, but he didn't understand. She was supposed to be locked up inside River Run. "Where's Lord Bolton?"
"The traitor who betrayed my brother and our house? He's right over there, where he belongs," Sansa said.
He jerked his head to look. He hadn't noticed before. They were only shadows against the dark that had already fallen again. But when she pointed right at them, he could make out the vague shapes of the heads mounted on spikes.
"The Knights of the Vale helped me take back the keep 2 weeks ago."
The men at his back were all disciplined, so Jamie didn't hear the groan. He just felt it go through all of them, the same way it went through him. Their comfortable, warm welcome after a cold 2 week march had just turned into a grueling winter siege instead.
"I don't suppose you're inclined to be reasonable about this," he said without much hope. "She was what, 15? I've got 30,000 men and another 50 are on their way. You can't hold the keep against us for very long. I'd be prepared to offer you terms."
"I wouldn't let you in if you offered me the Iron Throne," Sansa said, vengefully savage. "And I'm glad you're here. You deserve it, coming here to stab us in the back while we're trying to save everyone. Now you can all sit out there and die."
"Die of what?" Jaime said. "A snowstorm? We've brought winter gear and there's an entire forest of firewood right there."
She smiled down at him, small and mirthless.
"This was the last day of light at Winterfell," she said. "The long night is about to fall, and when it does, the dead are going to rise."
A ripple of unease went through the men at his back, and Jaime's stomach turned over involuntarily.
"We've locked up the castle crypts and barred them, but there's a whole lich yard in the town. Unless you turn around and run back south as fast as you can to catch up to the sun, they'll come for you. And I don't care," she added, glaring down at him. "I'm not letting you in. You threw my father in prison. You left Rob to face the Night's King alone. You sent murderers after my little brother. I'll be glad to hear you screaming in the dark."
And then she turned and went back out of the lamplight, Baelish going after her, and the other men on the gates drew back from the light themselves and doused their own lanterns. It wasn't what anyone would call a convivial atmosphere in the camp the rest of the day. It was nonsense, of course, a girl trying to frighten them off with ghost stories. But the dark grew more heavy and impenetrable with every passing hour, and the air was bitterly cold. "Set the men cutting down trees for firewood, and save the best and cleanest logs for trebuchets," Jamie told Lord Tarly, his second.
"Just as well to keep them busy," Tarly agreed. "There's a lot of fool talk going in the camp. We should have men flogged if they repeat the girls' stories." "Let's occupy them with work instead," Jamie said.
He rode around the camp himself, talking to officers here and there, making a point of putting himself on display, letting the men see he wasn't afraid. They were keeping track of time with hourglasses, checked against the stars, and bells rung every hour.
He had the men dismissed to their evening meal and to bed early to get more of a rest, and posted a double guard in case the defenders decided to try something clever, like sneaking out for a sortie in the night, hoping to panic them. And then he went to his own tent to write to the Red Keep and tell them that their advance had just been fucked by a 15-year-old girl. And Baelish, to be fair, who'd apparently lost his mind. Jamie was 10 minutes into his scratching when the screams started. He hadn't even taken his armor off yet, and he was outside with his sword in a moment. A squire brought his horse mounted up, and he started heading towards the noise with his guard. But before he made it there, more screaming had started on the other side of the camp. And then it was just coming from all around, as if somehow men were attacking them everywhere at once. "Form square," he roared. "Form square around the center of the camp." But even as he gave the order and men started to make the line, others were running towards them from the perimeter with their faces white and horrified. And the dead came into the torchlight behind them. You might have expected, he had the vague, distant thought, while he was fighting, that it wouldn't be very hard to kill men who'd already died once. They didn't have weapons or armor, and most of them were missing bits. Hands or arms or half their heads or the lower half of their ribcage, or their legs rotted away to skeletal sticks. But fighting them was like trying to carve frozen meat, and they just didn't stop. There weren't even really that many of them. Once he'd gotten the men to pull in and form square, most of the time they were idle. But they all had to stay alert, because every so often a pack of a dozen corpses would erupt out of the dark from one direction or another, snarling and hurl themselves onto the spears and start clawing at the men until they were stabbed down and completely hacked apart into twitching, severed limbs. And the cold kept getting worse. He put the men into shifts after the first few hours, letting some of them sleep. At least it was dark for everyone, no matter when they lay down. But after 12 hours, he left Tarly in command and tried to take a rest himself, and it was impossible. He jerked out of sleep every time the shrieking howls of another attack started. He finally gave up and tried to wash his face and go out again, but the water in his basin was frozen solid as a rock, and the coals in his brazier were dying. He stared at it and realized belatedly that they would run out of firewood after a few days, too, and if he sent men out for more. He stood a moment, cold and exhausted and blank. And then he went out and found Tarly and told him to get the men ready for a fighting retreat and to ask for volunteers for a rear guard. They had to retreat through the town, because if they'd gone off the road, they'd have been floundering in deep snowdrifts. But the dead came at them out of every alleyway and dark building on the southern side, like a flood rising up out of the lich yard there, overflowing onto them. Jamie took his 2,000 volunteers and made a line of battle on the road to shield the rest of the retreat, keeping the dead off while behind their backs, the rest of the army went streaming by, fleeing south down the King's Road. He heard the hour watch bells ring twice more before the last of the ranks got past them, and when he finally fell back with the rear guard, he sent word ahead to his cousin Elton, in command at the front, that he was just to keep going until he found the sun again. The bells went with the main body of the army, and after that, Jamie didn't have any idea of how much time was going by. More of the dead kept coming at them, and trying to keep them off and move was almost impossible. He divided up his force into four squadrons and had them fall back, leapfrog, one actively defending, the one behind them setting up the next line of defense across the road, the next one resting, and the last one falling back as far as they could. Tarly had insisted on staying behind with the rear guard himself as well. He came galloping back from the last squadron to snarl, "We're bleeding men by the dozens. The cowards won't obey the orders to stop and rest. They just keep going down the road. I need crossbowmen to fire on the deserters." "No," Jamie said. "If they want to go, let them. I hope they make it." He stayed with the active defenders himself, except when his mouth grew so parched he had to drop back and melt a handful of snow one bite at a time, shivering and sweating at the same time. His sword had been dulled to useless long since. He and most of the men had switched to heavy axes and hatchets and ice picks, tools that they'd gathered up out of the town. One big fellow had got his hands on a sledgehammer and kept smashing the dead over the head like driving fence posts into the ground until he hit one of them off target, getting it in the shoulder instead, and the thing grabbed at him with its other half-rotted arm, put two skeletal fingers right into his eye, and tore half his face off while he screamed. Jamie hacked it down with his woodcutter's axe and kept fighting. The numbers of the dead finally started to dwindle as they got farther away from the town. They were able to retreat a little more each time, and finally he risked it and just ordered the whole force to march. They already covered what Jamie thought was at least 5 miles, losing only a handful of men to shambling stray attacks, before he called a halt. They didn't see the rest of the army anywhere ahead, not even torches in the distance. But there were signs of the retreat. Arms and armor thrown aside, banners discarded, carts left on the side of the road. He stopped them where 5 carts had been abandoned together, and they made a makeshift barricade out of them, broke one up to make a fire, and boiled and ate a few sacks of abandoned dried peas, using discarded helmets as cooking pots. The warmth and food put a little heart back into them, and Jamie went round and spoke to nearly every man. That wasn't very hard. He was down to less than 700. He hoped mostly because of desertions. And set a watch before they tried to get a little sleep. Bundled 4 together in shared cloaks, taking it in turn to be on the outside. Jamie fell asleep for a little while himself out of sheer exhaustion, telling himself that he'd get them back to the sun tomorrow. And at least the rest of the army was safe. Not quite hope, but as close to it as he could get. Then Tarly's son, Dixon, who'd stayed with the first watch, was shaking him awake, his face stricken, and their own men were coming back at them out of the dark with armor and swords and eyes burning blue with rage. Many of the men broke and fled in pure horror, vanishing into the dark in all directions. Too many screams came back. Jamie pulled the rest of them together behind the meager shelter of the carts and managed to make another line for half the remaining men to retreat behind. He tried to send Tarly and his son with them, but Tarly said flatly, "No, my lord, I'll stand with you to the end." Cold and rigid. And when Jamie glanced at Dickon, the young man, boy, really, he was just big for his age, nodded. He nodded back and settled into fight until he was pulled down, trying not to wonder if he'd get up again after, and how many of his own men he'd kill if he did. The fresher dead men were better at fighting, maybe because they hadn't had time in the ground to forget. The bonfire held the dead men back better than the carts did. Jamie took a burning stick in one hand, and so did Dickon and a few of the other men who could fight with 2 hands. Using them together helped keep them off, and they set the other carts on fire as well, making a wall of fire that helped for a little while. But soon a soft, deceptively gentle snow began, thick, fat flakes coming down too steadily, smothering the flames even as the fires ran out of fuel. The footprints of the last retreat vanished beneath the snow. They were the only living men left in the world, around the only light left in the world. Dying. Jamie thought he was dreaming it at first, the horn call in the distance. But then it came again, and a few steps away another man said, "Did you hear that?" Just before one of the dead shoved a spear through his skull. Then the call came a third time closer by, and suddenly he heard hoofbeats, thundering, and riders were coming out of the dark, a great host of them, and they were out of a dream, a shining white wave spilling, armor gleaming silver with a light that wasn't coming from any torch, and spears and swords of glossy obsidian black in their hands. They swept over the field and left the dead lying fallen and utterly still on the ground behind them. They wheeled back around and came to encircle Jamie's force. Jamie stood, gasping, his axe head sunk to the ground, his hands only hanging on to the handle because they were almost frozen in place. He had scarcely 100 men left around him, all of them shattered and sinking to their knees. Tarly was just barely holding himself upright, hanging onto the side of one of the carts, the boy sagging beside him. And the riders parted, and one came forward out of the rest, riding an enormous elk with a shaggy white coat and a rack of towering antlers, and beside him a huge wolf the size of a horse, its gray fur tipped with silver. Jamie raised his head to look at him with effort. The rider, a young man, dark-haired with blue eyes brilliant in his unlined face, beneath a crown of bleached pale silvery wood, looked down at him. "Jamie Lannister," he said, cold and stern. Jamie stared at him and then said, "Stark?" His voice a small, croaking in the dark. "Your Grace," a woman at his side said to him, and Jamie dragged his eyes away to look at her. It was the woman who'd gone north with Tyrion, Brienne of Tarth. She'd taken off her helm. She looked different, too, her hair and her skin silvery, and she looked more like a statue than a living woman as she spoke. "What shall we do with these men?" Stark looked down at Jamie. "In greed and cowardice, Sir Jamie, you refuse to heed the call," he said, his words as sharp and cold as an axeman's blade, wielded in the service of justice. "You betrayed my father and struck at those who came to our aid. You weakened our defenses, set traitors and murderers upon us, and now you've come into my lands as an enemy, leading an army to invade and kill." Jamie swallowed, or tried to. His mouth was too dry, and he couldn't manage it, his tongue gluing in place. He dragged a breath in through his nose and barely managed to whisper out, "Spare my men, please." "Is that all you'd ask, Sir Jamie?" Stark said softly, and there was a deadly light in his eyes, almost cruel, too beautiful to be mortal. "Will you not beg for your own life, then?" Jamie would have told him to go to hell, only he couldn't, because he did have to ask for something else. "No," he said, "just don't let me get up after." The wolf made a low bark, almost a sound of coughing laughter, and Stark's eyes glittered hard. He said, "Bring them," before he turned his steed away.